We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 393 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and I'd like to welcome to the show for the first time, Barca's Faces. Very much like the Purist last week, I'm letting him decide when he wants to reveal his name and his face on his own terms, due to the fact that we got to know each other through Barca Spaces, aka on Twitter Spaces. I feel like we probably should have just done the show there, then recorded it and popped it up here. But because this is on YouTube now, the full show, because this is in audio format, I want it to be as crisp and perfect as I needed it to be. So I didn't just want the Twitter audio to take control. So Barca Spaces, you know, again, this is all on you to reveal your face and your name later on. But thanks so much for joining the show.
Thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here.
So just explain to me, you know, again, you're a little bit, quote unquote, new on the Barca community scene, but it seemed like there was a need on, especially obviously Twitter, on Twitter for what you've done. Yeah, so what went into deciding to do Barca Spaces, and how did you start to go about inviting people like me or like other people in this Barca community on social media?
Absolutely. For the longest time, for many, many years, I've always wanted to speak with and meet Barcelona fans from around the world. And it wasn't really easy to do this, apart from, for example, meeting people across the street, or whether you're in New York and you know other Barcelona fans, you become friends with them and slowly can introduce their friends and so on. So when I jumped into Twitter, I wasn't really using it to meet people. I was mostly using it to know what's happening right now with the world and, of course, with sports and so on. But then Twitter released their Twitter Spaces feature. And I immediately knew, oh my God, this is going to be big for the sports community, specifically for what I love, the Barcelona community. I was expecting that the likes of Barca Center, Barca Worldwide, Total Barca, and all the other big accounts like Barca Buzz and so on would be jumping on this, creating spaces on a weekly basis, maybe daily basis, depending on their availability and so on, to have all the Barcelona fans listen in, live conversations and so on. Meanwhile, I believe I heard a few things about something called Clubhouse, although I really never got into it, that's where the feature kind of was inspired by. I wish I knew about it earlier to kind of be involved, but alas, here we are with the Twitter Spaces world. But then I started to notice, well, not many people are doing this. I'm surprised, like only like regular fans are having spaces with like 5 people, 2 people, 3 people, and so on. So I thought, okay, let me start talking to these folks. So I actually started reaching out to La Senyera, to Barca Center, because I knew a couple of people who work kind of behind the account. And I asked them, how would you like to start these kind of spaces? At the time, they were like, no, we're not really sure. I don't know if we were comfortable speaking live in front of everyone. So I was a little bit disappointed. So I thought, okay, if no one's going to do it, I might as well start doing it. So I looked on Twitter. Somehow Barca Spaces was available, reserved it, and started. At the very beginning, I remember it was just me and 2 other people. Slowly, people were finding about us through searches and other tweets and so on. So slowly, we started having more and more and more. And suddenly we start reaching to like hundreds. And that's when random kind of popular accounts start to show up. And that's where the kind of accounts start to get more and more attention, which is what I'm happy to hear. I'm really happy with that. That's how I met Neil, Barsalev, Kevin, and many wonderful people, and start to see opportunities for more bigger and bigger kind of spaces. Originally, I thought, okay, we'll just have spaces before and after the match. And then I started to see that there was a desire and need. Oh, we want to know more about the people behind the accounts. Oh, that's brilliant. So I think I remember interviewing Raphael, and that was a kind of a record for me. Like, we had like 2,000 people listen in to it, and like, wow, people really care about these things. We had wonderful conversations with Raphael at the time, the Bartomeu era, the things that he knew about what was going on behind the scenes and how he was upset about it, things that a lot of people did not know about. So that was really eye-opening, very educational. And then slowly started talking to new people. And then Neil came on one of my Twitter spaces. And that also brought a lot more people. And then that's how kind of we grew. I'm really happy with the growth. I really never cared about the followers, but I just want to talk to people. I just really want to meet new, wonderful, smart people to learn from. And that's how eventually we came up with the idea. What if at some important times we bring in the big accounts to discuss random things? And that's how I met you. I met the Purist. I met a few wonderful people. We had a wonderful kind of roundtable discussion, which was awesome. So hopefully we'll continue to do this more and more often.
Yeah, I mean, the names you're saying, I mean, you're using first name, but by and large, almost every name that you said have been on this podcast at some point. So yes, yeah. I was destined to be in the Barcelona spaces at some point, just because this is the audio format and all that stuff. But all right, so we actually do have to actually talk about Barcelona today and talk about this on this show here. So where we begin, we're going to do Elche later. It feels a bit dated already, even though it's only been less than 48 hours since the match happened. But we're going to hit some of the main points for that. Again, not too much to talk about of a 3-1, just a dominant win against Elche, who were down to 10 men after the first less than 20 minutes. So it was kind of already decided that thing was done and dusted, but a few talking points there. Before that, though, one of the players who did not feature in that game, because he's only played the season against Victoria Pilsen and Cadiz this season, is Gerard Piqué. And the big question was posed by Sport, which means maybe somebody at the club urged somebody at Sport to release this article. It's usually what we're saying when it comes to Mundo Deportivo or Sport, that there's a reason why some big breaking story that's really an opinion piece. Will Piqué retire or should he retire? Why is that being released now? XYZ, right? And I think that it's aligning with the report, with the claim that, and it seems like the website that I'm trusting to, Capology, that goes over the salary. The claim is that Piqué earns 52 million euros this coming season, or this season, which at Barcelona is the highest salary at the club, also the highest in the Liga in totality, one of the highest in world football. And believe it or not, Piqué's 52 is somehow even way more than De Jong's 37.5, Busquets' 37, Alba's 20.8, and the 20 million for Umtiti, which is a whole different thing. Even with him being on loan, Barcelona is still paying that number. And this was in a report also released about the budget for 2023-24. We're talking about whether or not there's future salary limit issues for Barcelona and whether or not they run the whole risk. So what's the point of this? Whether or not they run the whole risk of the whole debacle about the salary limit. Remember when it came down to 97 million last season and Barcelona a whole bit of trouble trying to register players. And now this season it's in the 600s. And yet Barcelona still were struggling to the final day with a 600 million euro salary limit to register their entire team. That's what we're talking about with how high these wages are. And so obviously when you're looking ahead at the budget they're trying to set and the salary limit for next year they're trying to set, the short version is that with several things at play, like playing in Montjuic next season, and they also have to pay a rental fee apparently to that stadium. I think that's what I've seen, because during the stadium renovations, they'll be playing in Montjuic. And then again, having those big salary numbers on the books, again, if they cannot move anybody, then the salary limit will come down, which would make it hard for them to not only sign players, but to even to fit the players they currently have under next year's salary limit. So when all is done and dusted, I know I'm about to throw to you the easy part of it, and that's that should Piqué or will Piqué or can Piqué retire at this point, or what his timeline should be. And that's going to be based on sporting stuff. That's going to be based on Piqué the person. But realistically, again, this information popped off just to start this topic because he makes $52 million a year, which is just crippling for whatever the club wants to do next season. Whatever FIFA manager or whatever football manager player you want to find on social media or try to watch more video. I mean, again, I'm trying to watch compilations of players, but it does not matter a gosh darn bit at this point. They're not going to be able to afford anybody unless they can get Piqué off their books. Starting with Piqué. There's other players too, but starting with Piqué.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is Piqué's contract ending in 24 or 25?
It's 2025, I believe. Let me just double check.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay, check this one that it is 2024, actually. It's 2 years. Oh. And Young is 4 years, 26.
Okay.
This is at 2023, as we know. So he'll be done this year. And then Alba's is still a 2 year deal. So he still is 2024. UEFA Champions League Soccer is streaming on Paramount Plus. 9 months of heart stopping, hold your breath exhilaration is underway. With the biggest stars, top teams, and scariest fan bases across Europe. Watch every match from the group stage through the knockout rounds as Benzema and Real Madrid, oh I know, defend their title against Liverpool, Man City, Chelsea, PSG, Barcelona, I'll say it again, Barcelona, and more in soccer's biggest club competition. So don't miss a single sweat-filled second of regulation time, stoppage time, and extra time. And stream every match of the UEFA Champions League live, exclusively on Paramount+.
So, should Piqué retire, or should he leave, or should he stay? It's a really difficult question because it really depends on how much he values the club and how much he values his career, how much he values his ability to play. If you asked me that question last season, I would have told you, no, I don't think Piqué would be retiring, especially that Xavi counted on him and played him a lot of the games, a lot of the important games last season. But now it's been quite interesting. There's a complete change in the type of prioritization on who plays and who doesn't play. Looking at Piqué, we brought Koundé, we brought Christensen. Araujo is now emerging as a very reliable defender.
I think healthy even more so than reliable, as far as like how we categorize Araujo. Araujo was never healthy last year, so a healthy Araujo is a difference.
Absolutely, yeah. Touché. So with the availability of wonderful, reliable kind of defenders, I can definitely understand why Xavi is finally deciding, you know what, I'm going to bench Piqué and play players who can do a lot more for me, kind of better skilled, healthier, more reliable, and so on. Same thing with Alba as well. If you asked me last season, I thought, oh, no way. Alba will continue to play because Xavi continues to trust him. And that's why I was very, very disappointed when the preseason, Balde continued to play and he was doing really, really well. And then the first game of the season, Xavi decided to start Alba. I know that started a whole kind of storm of political and kind of dramatic response from the fans, from the board and everyone. But I'm glad that to see that Xavi finally realized, you know what? Yes, I made a mistake. I should have rewarded Balde for his wonderful performances by having him start in the season and so on. After all, he keeps bragging about his merit-based system. So yeah. Now, whether or not it makes sense to have them leave the club, absolutely, when it comes to the finances of it. At their age, to what they contribute to us on the pitch, $50 million a year is way, way too much. Not that's not something that you pay a bench player, to be honest. Plus, no one could justify $50 million a year apart for Messi because of all the things that he brings, apart from performances on the pitch, the sponsorships, the money, the attention, all that stuff. Piqué does not generate that much, but I understand it's not necessarily his fault. It was the fault of the man who shall not be mentioned on this on this podcast, who gave him a contract like that. He made a lot of mistakes. I understand why that president decided to give out these kind of contracts. Like, from one perspective, he thought, oh, the bigger the contracts I give to the players, the bigger I can claim their valuation is, the bigger the finances will look lovelier at the end of the day. It's a risky move. And if it weren't for the pandemic, we might not have ever found out about this, to be honest.
Well, I mean, even talking about, the names about Bartomeu and things, I always bring up when we're speaking about De Jong or whoever, that we should bring up Bartomeu, because again, I think so much, especially Umtiti's renewal and all that stuff, like so much ire is put on the players and decisions they're making. But again, they signed the dotted line for these contracts that in theory was built on a revenue that was supposed to be $1 billion. And it was malpractice when it was signed prior to a pandemic even, right?
Yep.
All the pandemic losses and things like that. So yeah, financially, like these were always contracts that were going to blow up in their face. And again, it was based on a salary structure where Messi is making what he's making. So you're saying, oh, a team is 11 players. So therefore other players must be built on a Messi salary structure, not on an actual healthy wage structure.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that's a big thing. I think though there is splitting hairs here between Piqué and Alba, because Alba at 33, you kind of wonder what more he could possibly provide to you. And I wonder how long his career still has left.
Yep.
He turns 34 in March. So I'd say Alba probably has two or three more seasons to be useful in the top flight somewhere.
Yep.
Piqué is 35 going on 36. And the question about Piqué and why I think, again, you're seeing the articles about him and you're not, I mean, Busquets, he makes what he makes, but I don't think he's on the radar right now, because even if what he, right, even if you're saying, oh, Barca can't win a Champions League with Busquets starting, I'm putting quotes around that, but even if Busquets can't win a, Barca can't win a Champions League with Busquets starting, like, yeah, fair question that we're trying to dissect and figure out, that he needs to be replaced eventually, sure, and financially, $37 million is too much, but like, Busquets rather still provides you on the field at a really, really top level club, like a team that is going to be fighting for La Liga, and Busquets is an instant starter, like, that tells you what quality he still has. And yes, as you said, Piqué was Barca's best defender last season, but a lot does change in a few months. And I also want to remind you that even being Barca's best defender, he was often injured last year.
Yep.
And those knee injuries in particular, just after Titi, those knee injuries not heal. You don't wake up and feel better, right? I think, not to show my age, but I'm getting to the point now. I asked my wife, I was doing a lot of physical stuff and people follow me on other stuff. And so I was waking up and the outside of my knee was hurting. I've never had knee problems, whatever. And my wife just says, well, you're post 30, of course, like that's what happened. You just wake up and then something hurts and then you start to walk around and it stops hurting anymore. So it's kind of where we're at. And I can't imagine that Piqué, who's had tons of knee injuries, I can't imagine that pain goes away throughout a day. And I think what's also going into this, there's multiple factors here, that Piqué has previously insisted, especially after the Bayern Munich match that we don't talk about here, that if he's no longer wanted at Barcelona, is kind of what he said, that he would call it a day. But really when the time had passed him, and again, now he's got four players ahead of him on the queue, that being Araujo, Garcia, Christensen, and Koundé. You could argue that Marcos Alonso, who can play left center back, where Piqué plays occasionally, is ahead of him on the queue. And looking down at Barca Athletic, I know he's young, but Xavi Riyad is already looking pretty good. Just good, confident young player who's going to deserve a few extra Copa del Rey minutes this year, and is already proven to be Barca Athletic's one of their most important and influential and protagonistic players. So there's depth there at the fifth or sixth center back spots in the academy as well. So I think the idea that Barca is hoping he hangs up his boots, the pressure, and I will tell you this, that this could get ugly if the club is trying to, through the media, pressure him, because his off the field stuff, and this is the final part of this, the off the field stuff really hurt his reputation. We already know that El Presidente eventually wants to be president of Barcelona in the future and all this stuff, right? But obviously what happened with him personally and Shakira and the new woman in the picture, that stuff, unfortunately, like, it affects the player's public image, him and his dealings in the Davis Cup, or was it? Yeah. The Davis Cup, and traveling mid season, the last few seasons, or tennis, which he has a fiscal stake in, and the money that Piqué has that's going different places. And I think the thing that he needs to look at too is being president of Andorra FC, who are now in the second division. If anything, like, I think the play for him isn't having anything to do with football, which means he should retire. But I think his play is that if I remain a part of Barcelona, we do a little bit of winning, they see me as just a leader around, which I don't know how they're going to do that if he makes 52 million euros. Like, the fans are just going to keep bringing that up. But I think his belief is that, oh, they're going to see me as part of this team, as part of this really, you know, I want to be a part of Barca, they reach the top again, so that really he could use that in the future to say, hey, here's my credentials. I know the whole Shakira thing, but you're not electing a president of Barcelona based on his relationship with one of the most magnanimous pop stars in the world. But you're not basing a football presidency on that. You're basing it on, hey, I was president of FC Andorra, and saw them make revenue hand over foot and took them to new heights. And I'm a legend of Barcelona, which again is to be the most important factor for how, why people vote for him. Yep. And I also was, again, part of those last glory years, right? I helped get us back to that level. The only thing is, like, is he going to step aside as a player when he needs to? But I don't know if that's going to matter in presidency. So I'm like, I'm trying to figure out his campaign more than I am even like trying to figure out why he, for sporting reasons, would retire.
So you brought wonderful points. So in my opinion, if it was up to me, he would retire, he would leave, he would focus on his business. Because quite honestly, he's a very business-driven person, and he's been focused on his businesses, the companies, and all the media, and all the things that he wants to do for quite some time. Even during the Valverde era, as you mentioned, sometimes he would skip training, he would come late in because he was busy doing work, traveling, showing his face around for other promotional purposes, blah, 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 all that stuff. He had so much power that he would be able to get away with it. And unfortunately, Valverde didn't really punish him. He would just show up, play like, you know what, you're starting today. Congratulations, PK. And then he would continue. It really set the wrong attitude within the club, within the team. Like, I didn't really feel the kids had someone to look up to. Like, someone would show up late and still get minutes. Not something I admired. But all this happened already. We're where we are right now with all the drama, as you mentioned, with all the horrible media surrounding him. I think he should take a vacation, retire, leave Barcelona, or go on to hiding or somewhere, focus on his businesses, reset his mindset, all the things that are surrounding him, let the drama die off, move on, and then continue to focus on the footballing aspects of things again later on with a healthier mindset, healthier mentality side, and maybe come back again, as you mentioned, try to become president of FC Barcelona, which is what seems to be his dream. From my perspective, he will only be successful at becoming Barcelona's president if he helps the club today, if he waives his wages, or at least part of it. Because when he runs for president, the first thing people will ask him to doubt him, where were you when we needed you the most, when the club was in basically in dying need of support financially? And they will say, hey, Laporta asked him multiple times to help the club, and he said no, 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 and no. They will bring all that up again. And if he doesn't do something about it today to help his case, I don't think he will ever become Barcelona president, to be honest. But that's assuming that's what he wants. I'm not really sure. It seems like that's the assumption that people have. I don't know if it's an inside joke that he had or it's truly his ambitions. No idea. But if that's truly the case, he has to act now. Because as you said, he did say after that Bayern game, he said, if I'm no longer needed, I will be the first person to leave. And yet he is still here, despite the fact of all the financial issues the company had, the massive salaries and so on. So it will be interesting to see what he does. In my opinion, for his sake and his career and so on, he should do what Puyol did, what Xavi did, what Iniesta did. Walk away when they were no longer really needed, when they were like mostly like bench players, and give up the remaining salary of their contracts, which scored massive points with the fans, massive points. The point, yeah, the club always welcomed them back, like as ambassadors, as some, they still to this day play some sort of role within the club. And I think it would definitely help him for the future if he does the same thing.
52 million euros is a lot of money though. Like,
exactly.
I do, like, to their credit, like, again, it's the third week of September and you don't know if the club will need you. Like, it's a long season, right? Even being fifth on that depth chart, like, injuries might happen for multiple players, or, you know, you don't know where Balde's progress is going to be if you're Alba, right? Like, you're still Jordi Alba sitting on the bench, and these players don't stop believing themselves, right? They don't, there's not a moment when then they're like, there is that thing when they say about those athletes, you die twice, right? You die as an athlete and you come to that conclusion and you kind of decide your own death. And then obviously as a person, but for a lot of these PK and Alba, like, I mean, Alba especially, like, what a quick turnaround this was. Being, I mean, his metrics were still offensively top five in world football and like all those different percentiles. He was a 98th percentile in like all these different XG and all those advanced stats that bore people. Like, he was top five in the world in all of those metrics, right? And so he didn't do anything to change. Like, he still stinks at defending. But then that's all he did. He just got a year older or had one offseason. And all of a sudden now here's this 18 going on 19-year-old coming for your job and bringing in Marcos Alonso on a one-year deal. And now you're sitting on the bench. And especially during LJ, there was a whole – I just wanted a compilation about how he kept yawning, which I want to throw that out. Like, body language is something, yes, but, like, these games are long. Like, all of these players are, like, want to be on the field. And I don't read into the body language, like, other than when players are coming off the field, like how they interact with their coach. Like, I always think that matters to a point, right? Like, it kind of says something. But I think we could – I want to really focus on Frankie DeYoung and two of the big talking points coming out of Elche. And what I want to start with is with Balde, because kind of transitions perfectly from that conversation. If you're PK, I think you're a bit surprised at the progress that Eric Garcia has made. Like, if you watch any Sevilla last year, you're like, oh, Jules Koundé is coming for my job. Uh-oh, like, that's not going to work out. If Araujo stayed healthy, PK knew in training, like, uh-oh, if this guy stays healthy, I'm losing minutes. And Christensen coming on a free, again, Chris, he's been solid. He's just been good. Like, that's all he's been. He's been solid. He hasn't made mistakes. We saw against Bayern Munich, like, very hard to particularly blame him for things. And in what he has done, quote unquote, wrong, it seems to be chemistry issues, communication issues for a back line that is just playing each other for the first time and are still a month into that process. So I want to remind people too that back lines take time to gel and figure things out. And so Christensen, I think the verdict for him will come at the end of the season. And I'm kind of willing to push that down. For Balde, though, that verdict is going to keep being reassessed, because again, you have Alonso that's very experienced left back, and then you have Jordi Alba, who's again a club legend, sitting on the bench. So for Balde, it's kind of every game kind of keeps showing up in totality. And for him, very much like Eric Garcia, these players under Xavi have improved. Pedri, Gavi, Balde, Garcia. These aren't just big names. Like, these are players that I looked at them in one light, in one way, and you look at them today, right now, and you go, oh, they're all, I mean, not that Pedri wasn't ever a useful player in Barcelona. He's kind of the exception there. And then Gavi kind of came as what he was, and we're going to see more and more from him. But in the case of Balde and Garcia, I saw one thing last season, and I'm seeing an entirely different thing this year. Xavi has got them to improve. He's got them to be better, and it's astonishing. So the stat, I'll leave it off before you talk about Balde here and what his role this year should be, is that Moukoko of Dortmund is the only player in the top five leagues who has a larger goal contribution for U19 players. As in all players who are U19 in the top five leagues, you'd think, I was surprised at this too, right? Because of Ligue 1. Wow. Ligue 1 is playing teenagers left and right. The Bundesliga has a reputation of playing teenagers left and right. And yet, and I mean, there are teams around Spain that, because of salary issues, are needing to play their youth academy players. And yet, it's Alejandro Balde who's in a three-way race for that left-back spot at FC Barcelona, is the one top of that list other than Moukoko with his three assists. Again, it's early days. Three assists is not like the end of the world. One player can do that in one game. But still, the point is that you'd think that, oh, how is he not? His final product isn't good enough or what have you. But yet his final product statistically has been better than almost every other U19 player playing. Like, a reminder that young players don't really contribute the final goal contributions.
Absolutely. This makes me very happy to be a Barcelona fan. Can you imagine how bad of a footballing kind of situation we would be in if we did not have La Masia? Like, just when we thought Bartomeu killed the club, we got lucky to find out the Gavis, the Baldes, and the returning of Garcia to kind of help fix and save the club from that disaster.
I mean, do you know how many think pieces? And I mean, even me on Barcelona.com, you can look at it. Like, Frances and I, for years, just had to keep writing, like, Sergio Roberto was the last one, right? With clenched teeth, like, when's the next one? Oh, Carlos Alenia. And then I bring up a name, or Delafeu. And, like, exhaustively for 7-8 years, I've been doing that. Like, La Masia is dead. That's what everyone says. And obviously on ESPN or wherever it is, like, La Masia is dead. So you just have to face reality. And then last 2 years, I'm like, Ansu Fati has been in La Masia for 10 years. Like, everybody, like, calm down a little bit. Like, and now you see Gavi and Garcia returning, as you mentioned, and Balde. And I mean, basically what it is that the young players like Gavi and Balde and the players who were always a year or two ahead of schedule, those players are starting to be integrated in the first team and be good on that. I always have to remind people that there were a few years there where I would look at that Barca, that UEFA Youth League squad, and I would go, like, this is the year or two before Puig and Callado. Let's put it that way. So it was, what, 2017 that would be, or 2016 era? I would look at that squad and I go, I don't see it. Like, I can't imagine more than one of these players being the first team. And then, again, Balde and Gabi, I've known about for a few years now, and I went, oh, wait, these kids are 14 years old playing with 16-year-olds. And then they were 15 years old playing with 18-year-olds. And they were 16-year-olds for Gabi playing the first team, but right, for Balde, he was 16 playing with the U19s, right? And so you're seeing these kids ahead of schedule, and I always tell you, those are the kids you have to highlight. Those are the ones you circle, the ones who are way ahead of schedule.
Wait till Yamal shows up.
All right, everybody relax. He's 15. Everybody relax. But also, again, I'll eat crow because honestly, when he came up, Gabi was 16 when he came up. And on Thursday's show, we're going to talk about a Barca B player who was the youngest ever to feature for a Barca first team for the Femini earlier in the week. Or last week, rather. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to eat crow because, he in 10 months, he turned 16. And then all of a sudden, there he is, right? Yep. But again, until they're there, everybody relax.
Absolutely. Now, back to Balde. To be honest, I knew he had talent. He just needed a proper coach to coach him, which he didn't really have until Xavi arrived. Yep. And a lot of people I remember in the Twitter spaces would be telling me, hey, I don't think Balde is Barcelona material. I think he will be the first to be shipped off. When I ask why, they would keep telling me, oh, because he didn't really play any games or didn't really have that many minutes under Xavi. But then you remember last season, there are two things that would be worth to highlight. One, there was this really funny, I think, La Liga rule that said that Barcelona could only use 3 Barça B players to be part of the first team or something like that. Yeah. And if you think about it, when Xavi took over, he was desperate for forwards. So basically, he used Jutla, he used Abde, and I think he opted for Gavi sometimes.
And then Nico as well. And then I remind you, his first game ever, he also started Ilacha Comas.
Yes, that's true.
A player who is always above schedule.
That's true. Yep. Yeah. So
5 players, as you said, for 3 spots. Yep.
Exactly. So he didn't really have that many options to include Balde. And based on the needs that he had, he opted to leave Balde in Barça B. And of course, also when the second half of the season came, we really were desperate to make sure that we win every single game. So he had to have his absolute best players, the ones who are ready to perform on a daily basis. So there were no times available for development, testing, trying new things and so on. He had to win every single game as much as possible to be able to qualify.
Balde also missed 4 months with a shoulder injury. And then
That's true. So that's why, from my opinion, I don't think Balde not playing meant that Xavi did not trust him. It's just unfortunate circumstances that we were left with that Xavi had to, that he really had to bring up certain people and rely on the experienced players, the ready players, basically. So when the preseason happened, I was very happy to see Balde coming in. I'm like, yes, I'm going to go see the match. I'm going to be excited. I want to watch it. I went to the Barcelona versus New York Red Bulls. I had a blast over there and I watched him. He was unbelievable. Like almost every single game he played, he did really, really well, exceeded expectations for someone of his age, playing with the first team and so on. And when the Juan Gamper trophy game came along, I was really happy to see that Xavi picked him over Alba. I'm like, yes, finally, he's going to get the chance. The whole merit-based system is in full effect. And he did also really well. And when La Liga started, I'm like, yes, finally, Xavi is true to his word. He's going to keep his word. And Alba starts. And I knew I was really upset. I'm like, oh my God, this whole talk about merit-based system was all kind of just talk, not real. I'm pretty sure that means we will be seeing Pique also start over Araujo, Koundé, and so on. But luckily, it was a slight mistake, and he corrected that immediately. although it was mostly because of pressure from the fans and the board as well. But I'm really happy to see that Balde is indeed getting the chances that he deserved and that he really, really earned. And I'm hoping that he continues to fight for his spot and prove to Xavi and the rest of the team, also the fans, that he deserves to be in the first team. And so far, he has not really disappointed. The only thing that surprised me was when Xavi kind of started Alonso over him against Bayern. I'm not going to complain too much about that because Alonso at the end of the day did really well. He exceeded my expectation. I did not really expect him to do it that well, given that he only had less than 10 minutes before that to prepare. But I was really hoping to see the full merit-based system in full effect, to be honest. But at the end of the day, maybe he thought, Xavi thought, okay, let me protect Balde just in case if Bayern basically eat him alive. I don't want him to lose his confidence and so on. So I think from that perspective, I'm going to let it go. But I'm glad to see that he continued to play Balde more often after that. So I'm really happy for him. And I think he will do really well on the long term. And Alonso would be a great person to rotate with. I don't really know what will happen to Jordi Alba, if he'll be only dedicated to the Ibiza game in the Copa del Rey or something like that, or will he actually be rotating in the long term. I don't know if this is a political way to force him out or to get him to reduce his salary. It's hard to say, although it was quite surprising to see that Barcelona try in the last day of the transfer window to send him to Inter Milan, to be honest. I did not expect it. Especially how much he showed that he was against moving anywhere else.
I think only Xavi could really pull this off in that dressing room because the question that people asked was, is Xavi going to be playing the sacred cows, as they're called, because he's friend with them and knows them? And the real question we should have been asking is, can Xavi continue to navigate a dressing room where he's upsetting his own friends, where Alba, you don't think Alba has something to say? He's one of the captains. You don't think Piqué has something to say? He's one of the captains. You know, like you're freezing out multiple of your captains, as well as, I want to remind you, Sergio Roberto is also one of the captains. And while he's quote unquote hurt, not even quote unquote, but he's like, he went to the international window hurt again, which made Hector Bellerin's arrival a little bit easier because Xavi could just say, hey, you know, Roberto's hurt right now. So Bellerin, let's get him some minutes. Let's get him some run out there. And we also know exactly on a one-year deal what Bellerin is there to do. But to go back all the way to Balde to put that to wrap that up before we talk Frankie de Jong, what makes Balde's job a little bit easier, I want to throw this in too, is something I've been calling for a while, where when Ricky Puig first was being called up, even prior to Quique Setién by Valverde for those few opportunities in the Copa del Rey and the like, or we'd see Callado, or we'd see Carlos Perez before he kind of broke out a little bit. When we'd see them play in the Copa del Rey or against Ibar at the end of a season or Celta at the end of the season, you would see 5 to 6, you know, multiple rotations where those players were now playing with Umtiti, who hadn't played more than 7 matches that year, or they were all basically being rotated at the same time. So that doesn't and never really told me much of anything. Like you're basically seeing a 60% third division side plus players who are completely not match fit from the first team, playing against a second or third division side who were pretty cohesive at that point or in the Copa del Rey round for a reason. Like they'd won other prior games against teams of their level, and that's why they're now playing Barca in what is the third round usually of the Copa del Rey. And so I think to see Balde be able to prosper and thrive, as I said with Balde, the one thing I really got right about him the last 2 years I was kind of worried about his progress was that his teammates kind of concerned me last year. I always thought and said that based on his physical tools, if his teammates are better, you're going to see a bit more from him. And that, again, has been very true. With Eric Garcia, those passes from the left center back out to him are getting to him faster. And that's more helpful where he can get farther forward quicker, right? He doesn't have to actually receive the ball from the left center back farther back in his own attacking third. He's able to get forward. And those diagonal balls are hitting him as opposed to missing half of them in a game. Like 70 to 80% of them are hitting, coming from Jules Koundé all the way across field or from Eric Garcia as a left center back. That's just there. Then next to him, the defensive midfielder who's protecting him by coming over. That's Sergio Busquets at times, or it was Frankie de Jong in that game against Elche. And then who's the left interior that's also covering for him? It's a guy named Pedri, who's so far been one of the best interiors in world football right now, who is 15 of 16 on his long balls coming out to Balde, 92 of 96 on his passes, that being Pedri, 5 key passes against Elche, right? Like against Elche, Pedri's going to eat. And so that's your left interior. And then who is he crossing the ball into, right? It's Dembele usually in front of him on the left wing. Or late in the game, it's Ansu Fati, who, yes, he's trying to recover his fitness, or Ferran Torres. But still, you can disparage those players, and Ansu's coming back, and Ferran Torres trying to figure himself out. But still, those are gigantic names. Yep. And then who is Balde crossing the ball into? Who is finishing those balls in from Alejandro Balde? The best striker in world football. Like, I say striker because striker is the appropriate term. This is what he does. He scores goals, right? Yep. Lewandowski, this was a fun stat here, is before he scored his second, this is a stat from the first goal, not the second goal in the game. So when he scored the first goal, he became one of just six players, or sorry, rather, he became one of just seven players who scored seven goals or more in their first six games in La Liga. He's the first to do it in the 21st century, right? Of all the Benzema, of all the Messi, whatever, like, he has really hit the ground running, that being Lewandowski, with these 11 goals total in the campaign. Insane. And the names on the list are the names you'd expect. It's Kubala, it's Socrates, it's Di Stefano, some other, now, Atletico Madrid fans, Vieri, they'd want me to say that name, Semina Ario from Zaragoza, in their heyday, if you will, and then going all the way back to 1947, the first to do it was Arrizabalaga from Athletic Club. But anyway, like, those are the names. Very few names. You're talking about the 50s, basically, and one in the 60s, 1997, 2022. Like, that's like the kind of things that Lewandowski is doing with his goal scoring to start this campaign. And my guess, Barca Spaces had been 40 on the season. And again, he already has 11. It's the third week of September. And I'm the one who went high in the predictions based on the other people I spoke to. Because they're like, oh, if he hits the ground running, he's 34, going to be 35. If he gets 30, that's great. It'll help the club win. But, I mean, this dude is on pace for, what is it, 55, 57 goals or something this season? Yep. I mean, that's going to slow down, sure. But, geez, like, that makes Balde's job easier. That makes all these young players that Xavi can put in to get better, to progress. It's a lot easier when your focal point up top and the guy in training every day. You talked about PK and Alba and whatever and their spirit, but even though he's not a culé or he's not like Blagrana or whatever, like, the way that Lewandowski trains and the way that he goes about his professional business, it wouldn't surprise me if these young players are looking at Lewandowski and going like, oh, that's our talismanic figure. That's the guy we're going to follow in the battle this year, because that's the guy who leads the line and the guy who's going to kill it. Like, that's the guy. Okay, and then speaking of players that you need to kind of follow in the battle and go after, it's Frankie de Jong, who was arguably the man of the match in that Elche match. And it seems to me, our spaces, that a rotation of Busquets when it matters and de Jong against the other 30% of the Liga teams as the pivot, and then de Jong playing as an interior with Gabi and with Kessier and then with de Jong, it seems to me like that's going to be his role this year.
So I think it's really difficult. I think Frankie de Jong is a really good player. However, people will continue to criticize him mostly because they know how much he makes. So he will have to perform close to perfectness for people to acknowledge his abilities and contributions to the team. With that said, I'm not really sure he is the Busquets replacement, to be honest. As a lone pivot, I don't think so. I believe also Ten Hag, his ex-coach from Ajax, mentioned that to be able to unlock Frankie, to be able to benefit from Frankie, you need him to be free, to be able to carry the ball, bring it all the way from the back, run with it, and dictate the game a bit forward, closer to the pitch, to be able to pass, shoot, do something creative, and so on. If you let Frankie run around on the pitch, then you leave this massive space behind you. So a simple counterattack will cause disasters. So, which is why in a lot of the Twitter spaces, everyone keeps saying the same kind of thing. What if Frankie and Kessier play a double pivot? When Frankie jumps up, Kessier goes back. When Kessier jumps up, Frankie goes back, and so on and so on. It's an interesting idea. I just don't know if Xavi would use that or would like that, mostly because it doesn't seem to suit his style of play or his formation or his tactics. But maybe like once in a while, he'll try it depending on the opponent. It'll be a cure. I'd really like to see how they perform together as a double pivot, both Frankie and Kessié. But I still am not sold on Frankie being a single pivot or the Busquets replacement. I think his abilities, his style of play is slightly different, or it could be regarded as very, very different, which is why I believe that Barcelona will go into the summer and spend big on replacing Busquets with probably, I think the two rumored ones so far are Ruben Neves or Martin Zubimendi. And I'm assuming they will bring back Nico to be that kind of understudy, that backup to that role. So yeah, that's kind of how I feel about the Frankie situation. And I wish he also will help out the club by reducing his salary, but that's probably a conversation for another day.
Yeah, I think the only other talking point from Elche here that we didn't really hit was that Memphis got the start and Xavi is fully willing to rotate players. We saw it, and I really enjoy the rotation so far this year. Like, it's rotation, yep, not for rotation's sake, to make sure that, you know, Busquets isn't playing every minute of every game like he did last year. Again, he was first in the minutes last year, but now he's ninth overall. That being Busquets. Pedri right now is third in total minutes behind Ter Stegen and Lewandowski, so I'd like to see him rotate it just a little bit more. But that said, again, Ansu and Ferran Torres, Xavi has the ability to kind of bring them along and kind of get them figuring things out again while also starting Memphis in a match against Elche and still getting 3 points. Again, I'll continue to reiterate this and bang the drum that the gap in La Liga between the top two and everybody else is just huge this year, to the point where Xavi is going to have that quote-unquote luxury to be able to, I mean, you have a player like Memphis Depay, who would be the best player on 98% of teams in world football. And so you have the ability to start him in a game and say, yep, hey, what can you give us? What can you give us? Anyway, speaking of what can you give us, Barca Spaces, you gave us more than enough time today. So I want to thank you for joining the show. And I mean, I was going to say plug it, but that's it. Like, it's Barca Spaces. It's going to be down in the show notes. And I recommend everybody to give you a follow so you get the alerts as to when you're going to be popping in. And that's basically, if you want to know who's going to be on the show the next few weeks or whatever, generally it just pop into those spaces and you're going to find a name or two that you're going to see. So I'm already in talks with some of the people that have been in your spaces while I was in there that I never met. And so the purist, we talked in the spaces, then we talked on here. So Bar Space has been invaluable for me as well. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. You're always welcome on my spaces.
Thanks. I appreciate that so much. So I also want to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in to the show, Twitter and Instagram. While you're on Twitter, also pop into us at the Barcelona Pod, at HelpMD13 for me. Close Facebook group, that's the Barcelona Podcast. We have a match thread in there that is new and improved, a little more organized this year. So commiserate your emotions with the other fans that way. And then Patreon is how we keep making these shows. YouTube is obviously where we can find these shows, as well as the match reviews and all the additional content. And then we also have, again, the way that you, that being on Patreon, the way to watch these shows without the ads. So most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon with Sparsa.